Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you so much for joining me today for another profound, in-depth conversation that we will be having. This show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible for yourself and well-being of the family and friends. And today we're going to be having a profound conversation about cancer. And we're going to be exploring the whole realm of cancer, from the risk factors, what to do when you're diagnosed, options. We have so much we're going to talk about because cancer is such a scary subject. And of course, our statistics just keep showing us that more and more people are being diagnosed with cancer, and we need to wake up. So, sorry about that, folks. Only so many things I can control in my life, and that's not one of them. So first of all, for those that are listening for the very, very first time, I absolutely want to welcome you and thank you for joining me. I'd like to invite you to go to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, or over to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, because if you opt in and like me, well, opt into my website or like me on my Facebook page, I get to send all of my shows to you. I either post them or send them to your inbox, and it's an opportunity to receive the archives and not miss one important life-changing show. So I hope you will join me either at drcherylselman.com or What Women Must Know on Facebook. Okay, so I want to jump right into our conversation today. We're going to be talking about a brand new book that's just been released called Vital Strategies in Cancer. And my guest today is Dr. Jim Roach, and I want to share a little bit about him before we begin our conversation. Dr. Jim Roach is a published researcher, national speaker, experienced practitioner with a national clientele, and with one of the most comprehensive understandings of integrative strategies in the world. He's one of the leading integrative medicine experts, a number one Amazon best-selling author in holistic medicine, national speaker, national consultant, international medical educator, national media communicator, researcher, and widely sought clinician with patients from across the country. Dr. Roach has been interviewed on radio and TV across the continent, and specializing in nutritional, botanical, functional, spiritual, integrative, genetic, and holistic medicine. He hosts and is a chief presenter for our nationally attended Practitioner Integrative Holistic Conference every November, and Integrative Cancer Conference, which I will talk about this Integrative Cancer Conference because it's something that everyone should know about. Dr. Roach is double boarded in integrative medicine. His book on his patient's spiritual near-death experience, God's House Calls, was number one on Amazon in four categories, and his new book, Vital Strategies in Cancer, gives groundbreaking insight in how to offer cancer care and outcomes at a level above what conventional oncology can achieve alone. So a really important topic, and I am just so looking forward to my conversation with Dr. Jim Roach, and I am happy to welcome him to the show today. Hello, Dr. Jim.
Hello, Cheryl. Glad to have you, or glad to be on the show with you. And there's so much to share here. I can't wait to share it all.
I know. You're so passionate about your work and your service to humanity. First of all, we should tell people that you actually have a practice in Kentucky, and I guess that's where you're from, right? Are you,
yes,
were you born and bred there?
I was born in this small town of 1,500 people, and I've been here my whole life except for 4 years, I guess, at Duke University and then medical school and residency. So, yes, this is my home. I love it here. And, you know, for the first 20 years, I practiced conventional approaches, giving more and more medicines to patients. And then around 2000, when I was approaching 50 years of age, I wanted to see how long, how well I could live. And I started attending national conferences not associated with pharmaceutical companies. I've been to 44 of those now. I've studied 13,000 hours outside of the office, and So that's changed my perspective completely. I've reduced my use of prescriptions 85%, and you get to the root causes of issues. And cancer, obviously, there's so much you can do to improve outcomes with cancer. So that's why I'm so excited to talk about that today.
And I want us to talk about that, but before we jump into looking at this whole cancer story, I'm just really curious, from your perspective, what do you think, or what are the factors that are driving this cancer epidemic? I mean, it didn't exist 100 years ago or so. What, from your research, what do you see as the main drivers for this chronic disease?
I remember seeing a report back from about 1850 where they said the incidence of cancer was up due to increased meat consumption. Finally, individuals could afford to purchase meat and eat meat, and they were blaming like a fourfold increase of cancer, which was particularly rare back at that point, on meat consumption. But there are so many factors. The number of toxins in our environment continue to increase. For example, in breast milk, there are over 100 chemicals typically identified when they assess that for toxins. And our ability to detoxify, I think, has been impaired associated with that. You know, if you think about it, every chemical that we're exposed to generally has to be detoxified through the liver. The liver is where you detoxify estrogen. So the bottom line is estrogen does not get detoxified nearly as well along with these other toxins. And buildup of estrogen has a couple of profound effects. One, it is overstimulating. So anxiety, panic, obsessiveness are associated with that. But also it promotes cancer, promotes autoimmune issues. So every autoimmune disorder, I think, is promoted by estrogen as well. And it's associated with being overstimulated. You have it's associated with impaired ability to convert glutamate to GABA and impaired ability to break down neurotransmitters like adrenaline that keep us in an anxious mode, a fearful mode. So a much more fearful society. We're grouped in closer together in cities now, so we don't, and with the technology of cell phones and so forth, we don't get much peacefulness in our lives anymore. So nutrition is certainly important. You know, when I was growing up, there were always several vegetables on the plate. That was back in the 1960s. And now I have someone in my office who eats every meal out, you know, every single meal she eats out. Mm-hmm. And obviously processed foods don't have nearly the minerals or the nutrients that healthy foods do. And they're not organic, they're genetically modified, which further estrogenizes the situation, promoting cancer.
So isn't it interesting? We've created this modern society based on technology, on chemistry, on pharmaceuticals, stress. I've had many shows talking about the dangers from our Wi-Fi world. So the more we move into this 21st century, the more we understand that every aspect of how our modern society is living is detrimental to our health. Unless we consciously make new choices.
Right, yeah. And, with my new book, or with my first book, I talked about how important it is to get spiritually grounded. And that's one way to try to counteract, this overburden of stimulation that we get through technology, the stimulation that we get, as you mentioned, through electromagnetic fields. And an opportunity to detoxify. We just need to, spend more time in prayer and meditation. And, of course, detoxifying through physical activity where we can sweat. Fasting periodically certainly helps. So all of these strategies are very important. Stable relationships, stable family life, and a network of friends that we can count on, all are important.
Critically for creating a balanced life, because cancer is, cancer is a chaotic condition in our body, and there are many factors that create chaos. So let's talk about that. So how would you describe cancer? Would you talk about it as chaos in the body?
Well, one theory I find quite interesting is the theory that the mitochondria in cells, those are the engines of the cells, get damaged and destroyed by free radicals, that is, toxins and inflammation, you know, damage our engines to give our cells energy, and finally the cell is left without any energy, and it's drowning, in essence. And so it's trying to figure out, how can I keep from drowning? And the only thing it can do is to inefficiently convert glucose down to lactic acid. Through that process, it's able to keep its head just barely above the water. But that's a process that generates, again, lactic acid that breaks down surrounding structures. That's associated with more gene mutations. And to be honest, you know, I encountered a Japanese researcher with cancer, and the cancer spoke to him spiritually, he said. And the cancer said, we don't want to be delinquent. We want to be healthy. So maybe one way to fix cancer would be to nurse these mitochondria back to health, and then there wouldn't be the need to multiply to survive. So certainly mitochondrial health is a crucial factor in protecting against cancer.
Can you just define what a mitochondria is for people listening who may not know what they are and their purpose in our cells?
Yeah, so with mitochondria, sugar is shunted into the Krebs cycle. You get fatty acids also shunted into the Krebs cycle. For example, carnitine's responsible for that function. It helps generate coenzyme Q10. And through that process, ATP molecules that generate energy. And without that energy, you can't get nutrients into cells. You can't get toxins out of cells. Now, the mitochondria do generate free radicals, so it's important for us to consume antioxidants to help counteract the free radical that's a normal part of the process of the cellular machinery.
Right. So mitochondria are these actually bacteria that live inside our cells. So we put a lot of emphasis on the DNA, and a lot of things I've been researching lately, we talk about the DNA in the cell, but the real powerhouse in the cell are these little teeny mitochondria that are really the engines that run every single function. They are the engines of the body. So you can't perform, nothing can happen in your body unless your mitochondria are working. They're providing that vital energy. So, Go ahead.
It's interesting that, you know, we are more a product, of course, of our mothers, because, as you know, we inherit the mother's mitochondrial DNA, and then we inherit the mother's microbiome. And when you look at those factors, our mothers have much more influence on who we are compared to our fathers. Now, you can go ahead.
Yeah. So interesting. So here's what I'd like to ask you. So let's start from the beginning of the cancer story. So someone finds that they have a diagnosis of cancer. So they just find out for whatever kind. What would you advise them the very first thing to do when you or someone you know has a diagnosis? Because that is often a time of absolute shock and overwhelm, and then people are trying to figure out what to do at that point. I mean, even if I, you know, God forbid, got a diagnosis, I'm not sure what I would do for the very first step. So what do you advise people to do for the very first thing?
Well, it's kind of a psychological emergency, but it's not a true emergency, and it's important to recognize that distinction with that. You need to connect in immediately with a provider, a healthcare provider, who has experience with integrative functional approaches in assessing the cancer and in deciding the initial interventions to do as well, because it's very easy in the panic situation to make the wrong decision right off the bat. You know, you may jump into surgery or may jump into chemotherapy or radiation or maybe even jump into biopsy before you're properly prepared. For example, if you're going to get a breast biopsy, you do not want to get that on day 14 of your cycle. That's when your estrogen level is the highest. You want to do that biopsy when estrogen levels are low, like during menses or a few days after that. So if you're postmenopausal, there are strategies like pills with cruciferous vegetable derivatives in them that help lower estrogen. You can take crisin at bedtime, which blocks testosterone to estrogen. There are a number of strategies that you can use to lower estrogen, so if, when a biopsy occurs, there's less risk for metastasis occurring. You know, when you stick a needle in a tumor, that's like stirring up a hornet's nest. And if a tumor is larger than the size of your eye pupil, that's larger than 2 millimeters, then it has a blood supply. And so those tumor cells can get sent into the bloodstream. An example of how I dealt with a patient in that situation, I had an elderly woman who came in with a goose egg in her breast. It was about 9 centimeters in size, which is like 4 inches. And instead of sending her immediately for biopsy, I put her on a prescription estrogen blocker to lower estrogen levels as much as possible. Now, in women postmenopausally, at least 90% of the time, those tumors are estrogen receptor positive. So there's a 90% likelihood that we were going to be able to shrink that tumor down. And sure enough, in 3 weeks' time, that tumor had shrunk to 1/10 of its original volume. So I postponed, you know, the appointment with the surgeon, who then was able to freeze the tumor, which is a much better approach when you can freeze it. There is some research going on around the country. I think it's called the ICE studies, where if the tumor is less than 1.5 centimeters in size, you can have the tumor frozen at no cost as part of the study and research. There's a doctor in Knoxville who also is doing cryotherapy. But I sent this patient to a Dr. Jason Williams, who freezes up to 4 centimeters. And so it was very easy for him to freeze. And it's been 8 years. She's not had any other problems since then.
Well, so getting some second opinions, finding integrative practitioners. Can I just ask you really candidly?
Yeah.
Because I have friends that have had a diagnosis. They really wanted to do an integrative approach, but they found the cost prohibitive. Why is that? Why is that so many of the integrative clinics are so expensive? I mean, it could be tens of thousands of dollars. It could be $20,000, yeah. $30,000 to do an integrative approach. I haven't been able to reconcile that within myself.
Yeah. In Mexico, the price has gone up substantially as well for those who go across the border to seek care. At least starting out in this process, you don't have to go that expensive route to do that. And sometimes, you know, often those routes are not definitive treatments as well. So I know with one doctor, for example, you would go to his practice, you would get intravenous vitamin C, maybe intravenous mistletoe, and other remedies. And yes, for a 1 month treatment plan, it would be $30,000 to do that. But those generally are not going to be curative types of interventions. So I think they're, you know, going through my office, for example, what we do typically, and I still take insurance, I take a couple of insurances, Medicare and Anthem in my office, but, you know, the blood tests that we do through our office are covered by insurance. And there are about 10 blood tests that I want to have done every month. The supplements that I recommend, on average, would run maybe $500 to $700 a month. And it does involve taking a number of pills. But I always point out to my patients, I say, well, there are a lot of patients 6 feet under that wouldn't mind taking a few extra pills, you know, to stay above ground, right? And as much as anything, you know, with this cancer process, it's understanding yourself. It's reinventing yourself. It's learning from this. For so many people, you know, this – you can make this into a blessing for your life because, you know, if you haven't been focused, you know, it's the individuals that have been estrogen dominant, and because they've been estrogen dominant, they've been vulnerable their whole lives. They've been fight or flight, you know, the adrenaline kicking in most every day through their whole life and very vulnerable because of that. You know, estrogen dominance attracts negative energy into your life, and if you experience trauma, your adrenaline's going to kick in very hard. You're not going to be able to metabolize that, and that's PTSD. And so one of the most important things with that initial visit with patients is I point that out and say, you know, the religion I'm a part of, in order to be forgiven, we're required to forgive. So you have to forgive yourself, number one, and number two, you have to forgive, you know, anyone in your life who's harmed you, not because they deserve it, but because we have to get rid of that yoke of unforgiveness for us to heal. So that's an essential aspect of that. And then getting patients spiritually grounded is essential at the first visit. peacefulness is the number one goal here. Now, they did research with mice where they implanted tumors, and they stressed one group of mice. The group was stressed had a 30-fold increase in metastasis. Now, when they gave the drug propranolol, Interol, which blocks adrenaline, that instance metastasis was less than half. So blocking adrenaline was very effective with that. But you don't have to, you know, get on the drug propranolol. I think the key is I've had, you know, 64 patients with spiritual near-death experiences. And when I connect patients in with that and tell them that, you know, the downside my near-death patients report is ultimate bliss. Now, I've had two patients with negative near-death experiences. One was an alcoholic. It shook him up. He didn't share the details, but he did for the next few years everything he could to make amends. And then 2 years later, he had another near-death experience, this time blissful. So, you know, if you're not on your spiritual pathway is doing what you love to do that makes the world better, that keeps a roof over your head, right? That's what you're supposed to be doing. And if you're not on that pathway, then this is a wake-up call, you know, to get on that pathway. But if you're giving love to the world, you know, you don't have anything to worry about. You're going to be fine. And, you know, they didn't teach that to me in medical school, but it's maybe the most important lesson of life is to learn that, you know, this life is not the end. There is life beyond. And coming from a scientific mind, you know, they try to knock that information out of you in medical school. Anything you can't see, touch, you know, hear, feel, you know, you aren't to believe. But, you know, if you understand quantum physics, E equals MC squared, I think Einstein was right. You know, we look at each other, we see solid mass. Reality, we're just energy fields. We're 99.9% energy. The distance between electrons is vast. So, you know, when a doctor's doing CPR up above, you know, the spiritual energy field is watching every detail. They can describe every detail when they come back down. You know, blind people, when they're up above, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, a famous psychiatrist, noted, can describe every color, every detail when they come back down from those near-death experiences. So once you grasp that, once you understand that, then ultimately it doesn't matter, you know, whether you live or not. And if you can let go of the fact that you don't have to live, then your immune system is going to be a lot stronger and your survival opportunity is going to be much greater.
This is such a big topic, and let's tie it in. So if a person gets a diagnosis, the first thing that comes up is generally fear, right? Fear that you're going to die, and the terror. And as you were saying, fear itself can exacerbate the condition of cancer, can exacerbate metastasis. So the very first thing a person needs to do, which may not be the best time when you get a diagnosis, this is where, you know, living a life that puts into place spiritual practices, supports you, gives you the resources to deal with a crisis situation and to look at some of these deepest fears that are surfaced when we, you know, hear the doctor's, you know, diagnosis for us.
Yeah, the incidence of suicide that first week is 12 and a half times higher. And the incidence of heart attack is about 6 times higher that first week. So, yeah, fear plays into both of those. And so that's why it's so important to get connected into an integrative functional doctor with experience and with hopefully a spiritual type of background as well with that, so they can address those issues quickly. And there are a lot of supplements that help achieve peacefulness because, again, the individuals that end up with cancer are the ones who have been in fight or flight their whole life for the most part. They don't detoxify as well with that. And genetically, they're prone to being on the move constantly, you know, and most healthcare practitioners are in that category, right? We're detail-oriented. We're OCD. We cross the T's. We dot the I's. We're very thorough. That's what makes us so good at being a healthcare practitioner. But it makes us susceptible, makes us vulnerable to illness. So nutrients, I think, play a very important role. And my favorite one is to use something called inositol IP6. Now, the IP6 stands for inositol hexophosphokinase. And so if you look up on PubMed, which is the government's resource and all the studies, there are quite a few studies looking at inositol IP6 showing a benefit in tumor management. So that's one I like to. It dampens estrogen levels. It dampens dihydrotestosterone. So whether you have breast or prostate related cancers, or even if you have a hematologic cancer, those are a lot like autoimmune disorders. And so dampening estrogen, which promotes autoimmune disorders, is helpful with inositol IP6. You know, research with inositol, that's vitamin B8, by the way, you know, 4,000 milligrams every 8 hours was shown to be equivalent to SSRI antidepressants for anxious depression. So it supports positive mood as well as getting you in a relaxed state. But there are many other nutrients that can help you get into a more relaxed state that have maybe anti-tumor qualities. For example, L-theanine is in that category, lemon balm in that category to some extent. Chamomile tea is another excellent one. So you want to be using those until you achieve that peaceful state 24/7.
Okay, so the first thing when you get a diagnosis and you notice you're dealing with that anxiety and fear is to calm yourself, to calm down, that you are able to, that there are ways to heal, that you can recover, or it's really not the time when you get a diagnosis to start investigating alternative approaches. This is where the opportunities and shows like this and all the books and your book Vital Strategies in Cancer are so critical. You want to have resources and knowledge before a diagnosis, ideally.
Yes,
but you have to keep yourself calm. I mean, you have to, you know, I've had many guests, and I have another show called The Love Co., and we talk about more spiritual things on that show, Jim. And, you know, the importance of meditation, the importance of prayer, the importance of staying calm and centered on the brain and what it does to the brain and how it makes us more effective and, helps us manage depression and anxiety and be more creative. These are life skills that are essential to live a fully, enlightened life. They're essential. They're not options. They're essential, and many people are beginning to realize how essential they are for helping us to navigate through life.
Yeah, when you meditate, that stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system in the brain and creates new networks to keep you in a calm, peaceful place all of the time, not just the time when you're meditating. And of course, there are other healthy ways to get in a peaceful state, and that includes exercise. So physical activity is a wonderful way to get rid of adrenaline in a healthy way and to help you rest better at night. So in fact, exercise, and I recommend, for example, walking at a pace where you can get one sentence out but not two sentences out, right? Maybe 45 minutes a day would be a good average with that. But that is, and research has been shown to be more effective than chemotherapy for breast cancer, for colon cancer, for prostate cancer. So taking a truly comprehensive approach is essential, looking at all of these different avenues that we're sharing with patients. And if you're, your work environment is stressful, if your home environment is stressful, this is a time to reexamine that and to, you can reinvent yourself and reinvent your life in this process. If you have an abusive relationship, it's time to move out. If you're in an abusive work environment, it's time to move out. You should be in an environment where you have nurturing individuals surrounding you, people that, can share their love and their ambitions and wanting to make the world better. That's the environment you want to be in. You can, reinvent your name. If you're Ann, you can go to Annie, right? Annie Brandt, who's, she developed breast cancer in 2001, metastatic to her brain, right? And she got treatments, and actually she said God spoke to her twice, and she kind of knew that she'd probably be healed, but you still have to go through that maze. And now she has conferences every year out in California to help others get through this process. Her book, by the way, is an excellent book, The Healing Platform by Annie Brandt. But she changed her name to Annie. There's also Ann Fonfa down in Florida who has the annual Integrative Cancer Conferences. She's another good example of that. But reinvent yourself. Nobody's going to complain and say, oh, you shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that. You have cancer. Nobody's going to say anything to you to keep you from doing what you really want to do.
Do you perceive cancer as an experience that really is a huge wake-up call that's telling people that they need to make changes in their life.
Absolutely. You know, you've heard it before, you know, if you do things the same way, you're going to have the same outcome, right? So if you want to continue with cancer and have worsening cancer, then keep doing the things you were doing at the time you were diagnosed, right? So if you want to heal from cancer, you need to totally change the way you do things. I remember when my PSA level went up to 12.5. Normal PSA, that's the prostate tumor marker, is less than 4. But when it went up to 12.5, and having had a father who was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and the initial thing was a rare form, and they said, well, we're going to have to remove your genitals, right? Always get a second opinion, as you indicated earlier. He got a second opinion, and that wasn't necessary. Unfortunately, he was able to heal with that. But when my PSA was 12.5, I remember I felt panicky at that moment when that happened. And right away I started, you know, being perfect with my nutrition. I was doing smoothies, vegetable smoothies once or twice a day, fresh. I was balancing my life. And gradually over a year's time, I chipped away at that PSA till it finally dropped about 2.5. But yeah, those types of wake-up calls can change. You know, if you eat properly, if you're getting proper physical activity and balancing your life, the life's a lot more enjoyable that way, and you're able to accomplish a lot more as well. So it's a blessing in so many ways. And you know, it is, there's so much you can do that there's always hope. There's always hope in these situations. And not maybe everyone doesn't yet believe in God that's listening to this, but it, you know, it's not your oncologist who's going to determine when you're going to die. You know, it's only God will determine ultimately when you die. And, you know, one way to look at this is you can say, well, God will thank you. I get to graduate now, right? I'm precocious if you're young. But you can also say, well, God, but I have this mission I need to do on earth. I've got this grandchild that I need to be sure gets raised properly. So I appreciate the opportunity to graduate. However, let's talk about this. I want to be around, and I can do good things on an ongoing basis. You know, these patients with spiritual near-death experiences, they report the other realm is more real than this realm. They get mad about coming back. They're not afraid of death anymore, and they become very mission-oriented and focused. You know, it transforms their lives. And so we can learn so much from these individuals. And to me, it was a real awakening when half of my serene, upbeat female patients, when I asked them, shared a paranormal spiritual experience that they had had. Half of them. It may be a premonition, an intuition, an out-of-body experience, or even they'd heard voices or visions. Now, if you hear a voice that says, go out and kill people, you go to the psychiatrist. Right, but you know, if you hear a different type of voice, a positive voice, then you know that may be a very sacred type of thing, and these individuals don't share it with anyone. But if they trust you, they'll share these stories. They don't tell their husbands. They don't want to be scoffed at. And again, they don't want to be sent to a mental institution or to psychiatrists. But these women have a knowing after that, after these experiences, in a higher power, and it transforms their lives. And men have some of those experiences, but it's about a 10-to-1 ratio. And I find it's connected with estrogen. The higher your estrogen, the more intuitive you are, and the more spiritually connected.
You talk a lot about estrogen, which I find really fascinating, because I wrote a book many years ago. It's still in print, called Hormone Heresy: What Women Must Know About Their Hormones. And it was written before estrogen dominance was really a, you know, a common term, and understanding that we have men and women, for a variety of reasons, exposure in the environment, impaired liver, for, you know, many reasons, we are having an excess level of estrogen, an abnormal high level of estrogen, sometimes abnormal high level of a more stimulating form of estrogen than in relationship to other hormones than you know we ever had before. Do you see this as a driver to not to many forms of cancer? Is that what I hear you say?
Yeah, absolutely, by a number of different mechanisms. But you're absolutely right. You know, first of all, this instance of estrogen dominance is rising continuously. And Roundup, glyphosate is one of the key factors with that, because anytime you go out to eat, if it's not organic, you're getting Roundup. And Roundup kills off, you know, the lactobacilli. That's, you know, almost half of the intestinal tract microbiome that we have. It generates oxalates in the intestinal tract. Oxalates clog up a key detoxification pathway, the transpiration pathway. So we're not able to get rid of toxins and estrogen effectively by that mechanism. And then the higher the estrogen levels are as well, then that interferes with detoxifying other substances from the liver. So the liver gets overburdened by this process. And then if you're in fight or flight, you know, associated with this because of all the different stimulations, you know, every time your cell phone goes off, you're in fight or flight, right? And so you shut down, you go into a situation where you're tearing down your body's organs and tissues to generate sugar to escape from the saber-toothed tiger, right? So the liver is not getting as much blood flow. It's not able to detoxify when you're in fight or flight. So our technological world is one of the major issues as well. The electromagnetic fields that we're exposed to from cell towers, from smartphones, from even just wires going through the walls, you know, generate electromagnetic fields. And when we're exposed to that, that increases intestinal permeability. And then also increases blood-brain barrier permeability. And the significance of that, as you well know, is, you know, with increased intestinal permeability, food proteins that we eat before they're fully digested are able to cross into the bloodstream and before they're converted into harmless amino acids. And since they can cross into the bloodstream in those situations, the immune system sees it, thinks it's being invaded, sends out antibodies to attack the intestinal lining. Of course, every time you eat that protein, you got those antibodies attacking your intestine and attacking those proteins anywhere in your body that it senses those, and which is basically what autoimmune issues come from. And basically, we all have autoimmune issues now. We all have these food sensitivities. 95% of my patients sensitive to cow milk products. So these are all factors. You know, nutrition is really, really important in this process. Milk products have twice as much casein. Casein is cancer-promoting. Now, if it's grass-fed, that's better, but you're still getting that casein involved. Goat products have half the casein, and I actually am okay with goat yogurt during cancer scenarios because that has a high content of lysine. Lysine strengthens the structures between cells to inhibit invasiveness. So I think, you know, some goat yogurt once or twice a week is a good nutritional program. Mushrooms are wonderful because mushrooms increase testosterone block estrogen. Testosterone strengthens the immune system to help you manage. So you want a nutritional protocol that helps, you know, minimize sugar. Tumors love sugar. In fact, there's research with early breast cancer that a certain group of women can get a 24-fold increase in metastasis because of higher sugar levels in their bloodstream. Iron is another nutrient that tumors love to consume, so keeping sugar and iron low are particularly important. I monitor in the blood work that we do, we look at copper and zinc levels. Now, zinc blocks testosterone conversion to estrogen, and copper, by suppressing zinc, promotes estrogen. And copper is essential for what we call angiogenesis, growth of blood vessels in tumors. And so if you get copper levels down as low as possible and get zinc up as high as possible, then that helps minimize that risk. Now, copper's in some of the foods that I love to eat, you know, nuts and dark chocolate and even avocados have a lot of copper in those. And we don't want to eliminate, you know, avocados are a lot of good qualities, but maybe don't eat them every day. And when you do eat them occasionally, take a zinc pill afterwards, kind of neutralize that high copper with that. So modulating hormones is real important. Nutrition plays a big role in that. You know, in fat cells, we convert testosterone to estrogen, so physical activity helps keep our fat levels down a great extent. And also, you know, the fastest way to kind of lose weight is to go on a grain-free diet. I find my patients lose weight much more rapidly that way. And there's the book Grain Brain, of course. You get inflammation in the brain, brain fog when you eat those, the book Wheat Belly. So we want to, it's a time to get fit. So this is a wake-up call to, you know, if you're not in optimal fitness, if you're not slim and fit, go that direction, and that will substantially improve your survival prospects.
That's great. You know, you talked about zinc. I think I think people are more deficient in zinc than they are in magnesium, and everyone is deficient in magnesium, so you can imagine how deficient we are with this vital nutrient, zinc, that you were talking about. So, I think everyone really needs to improve the zinc levels of their diet with supplements and foods that have high zinc in them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do consulting for a national testing company that looks at micronutrients. And so the first thing I look, because it looks at like 30 different micronutrients, the first thing I look at is that zinc-copper ratio. Because if you see a higher copper level and a lower zinc level, those individuals are estrogen dominant until proven otherwise. As I've already mentioned, 80% of it is estrogen dominant. So I think you're right. Zinc deficiency is a growing issue. It's getting worse and worse. I think if we'd looked at zinc levels 50 years ago, they would have been substantially higher than they are now. And I think that's tied in, with estrogen dominance that we're seeing so much. It's crucial. Both zinc and magnesium are especially important. Of course, vitamin D, is huge. It boosts testosterone, blocks estrogen. And in men, it boosts testosterone 20%. So it's quite profound. Estrogen dominant individuals, for the most part, have low free testosterone, as you know. And so that's the interesting thing about birth control pills, right? You take birth control pills when you get married. What does that do? Well, all that estrogen goes to the liver. The liver produces C-reactive protein, so you get double the amount of inflammation. It produces sex hormone binding globulin, which binds up not only estrogen, because that's its role, is reduce the amount of estrogen to X amount in the bloodstream, but it binds up thyroid hormone, testosterone levels, and then the clotting factors are produced in the liver, and so those are tripled, so your risk for heart attack or stroke goes a lot higher. So when you get married, you get fat, your libido sinks, right, and then you're prone to higher risk of cancer associated with all of this. So we really need to rethink hormones. I'm glad you've been writing in that realm because balance is important. And let me mention briefly, because so many individuals are using bioidentical hormones, and not all practitioners understand all the ramifications of bioidentical hormones. Progesterone, is supposed to counteract, the estrogenic effects of estrogen and those formulas. But 80% of the time it does that, but 20% of the time it can convert into estrogen, I find. My patients may get breast soreness from taking progesterone, or they might get acne from taking progesterone because it's converting into, say, dihydrotestosterone. And actually, research shows if you have an early breast tumor and you're on progesterone, that increases risk of metastases. So these days, occasionally patients have to be on estrogen and to maintain their brain to protect against, their brain shrinking and atrophying. But I use, instead of progesterone, say Vitex, Chase Tree Berry, I use sometimes Inositol to balance that. And then there are plenty of natural botanicals that can help support testosterone. Maca, for example, is a very inexpensive one. You get a high quality at a good price. So I'd much rather go the botanical route. Each herb has hundreds, if not thousands, of beneficial nutrients in it. And so it's nice to get five vegetables, but what if I could get 100 vegetables and offer the body a cornucopia of all these nutrients so it could have what it needs to heal and to perform optimally? So botanicals is a big part of my approach with cancer.
I'm so glad you are sharing that. I have to say I've been so, I would say, critical of the trendy approach of putting all women on bioidentical hormones forever. I mean, once you're on bioidentical hormones, most women don't have a plan or to get off of them. And so from my research, I just see a lot of risks involved with that. And like yourself, I work with a whole slew of natural approaches, including traditional Chinese herbal formulas that help to regenerate hormonal essences. But, I do nutrigenomic testing, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And one of the things I want to say, in the hundreds of tests that I've done, I would say 97% of the people I've tested have impaired ability to properly detox estrogen into a safe metabolite. And instead, it turns it into a very dangerous free radical form that can damage the DNA. And if people can take broccoli seed extract, which turns into a molecule called sulforaphane, it can help correct that. I mean, no one's talking really about that, Dr. Jim, about how we need to support the liver metabolism of estrogens, because without it, it can drive all the hormonal-driven cancers, including prostate cancer, which people don't realize is an estrogen-sensitive cancer.
Yeah, you're absolutely right by that process. You really need to know what you're doing, and so many practitioners are not familiar with that. But as I mentioned with progesterone, you need to be very cautious. You know, with when you give testosterone, you know, it can convert into estrogen. So is that happening in you? Is it staying as testosterone, or is it converting primarily to estrogen, just worsening that estrogen dominance associated with that? I do a blood test called estrone sulfate that measures the storage of estrogen and compare that level to estradiol. And normally I like a ratio of about 2-to-1 estrone sulfate to estradiol. And a lot of women, I find a 4-to-1 ratio or a 10-to-1 ratio with estrone sulfate. And those individuals are at high risk with that. And as you mentioned, you know, broccoli or, you know, cruciferous vegetable extracts are very helpful there. You know, fish oil, green tea, or some of the other things that you can utilize in that situation. But you need to kind of step into that very, very carefully. I never want patients to start out with a formulation with estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, because you don't know which direction progesterone is going to go. And it can go a harmful direction rather than a helpful direction, because normally it's calm and relaxing 80% of the time, but 20% of the time it's stimulating. And so if you're combining it with the others, you don't know. If you take it in pill form, a metabolite is a barbiturate. So you're always going to get drowsy from it, so you don't know whether it's truly you know, going to be stimulating going the wrong direction when you take it in a pill form. So I'd never advise taking progesterone in that way. And it needs to be monitored carefully if you do it. And really, I think just protecting the brain is the most important role that estrogen has. And then you balance and protect. You know, I want every patient right on turmeric every day for the rest of their lives. It lowers blood pressure, blood sugar, blood cholesterol, thins the blood, anti-inflammatory, gets toxins out of the system, prevents gallstones, antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral, antidepressant, equivalent to Prozac, for atypical depression, 100 anti-cancer properties. Now, cancer identified, that doesn't have improved outcome, but also reverses amyloid plaque buildup of the brain characteristics of Alzheimer's. It boosts, grows the brain by two mechanisms. Turmeric can boost brain stem cell growth up to 80%. And curcumin, 90 milligrams twice a day over 18 months, boosted memory 38%. I want every patient on turmeric every day for the rest of their life. I want every cancer patient on turmeric continuously. That's key. But you want to block as many tumor pathways as you can. So adding in resveratrol that hits 35 different pathways, green tea that hits 12 different pathways. And if you're getting chemotherapy, you know, the patient's told, you know, stay off all botanicals. And, you know, if it's not done in a wise way, that actually is good advice. But if you get wisdom and the counseling in terms of the proper supplementation with chemotherapy, you can substantially improve outcomes. Because basically, you know, chemotherapy goes after 2, 3, 4 cancer markers really hard, but those tumor cells are going to try to mutate away. If you take turmeric, which blocks 100 pathways, and take resveratrol and take tirostilbene and others, that's blocking the exits. The tumor cells have no place to mutate. Now, a key thing, you know, since I brought up chemotherapy, fasting for 24 hours before chemotherapy is essential, because your healthy cells can go into a dormant fasting state and it will stop multiplying, but tumor cells don't have an off switch. They keep multiplying, so the chemotherapy is going to be just as effective, but your healthy cells are not going to be attacked by the chemotherapy. Then after chemotherapy, you know, at the medical center near here, our patients are offered a Little Debbie snack cakes and other sweets as treats. And what happens? The tumor cells say, thank you. I was halfway dead. You fed me, and I'm able to survive. So if you fast for 24 hours afterwards and your body's saying don't eat anyway, right, you're nauseated often. And so if you obey your body and don't eat for 24 hours, those half dead tumor cells can go ahead and die, and you're going to have better outcomes with that. So there's so much opportunity.
That's a great strategy.
You can at least, you know, double outcomes at a minimum with appropriate approaches.
So I just want to say you mentioned so many benefits of turmeric, and I want people to really hear that. It's turmeric or curcumin. Would you prefer curcumin?
Well, most of the research has been done with curcumin because a lot of the supplement companies are able to have their own versions of curcumin, so it gets all the publicity. But there's some anti-tumor properties in turmeric as well, and I mentioned turmerone, which promotes brain stem cell growth up to 80%. That's not in curcumin, right? So if I like to get turmeric with curcumin, I like both of those, and of course a little bit of pepper improves the absorption with that. So I like the whole package.
Okay.
You know, the plants have an innate intelligence with them. And if there's a chemical that a plant evolves that has beneficial effects but maybe a toxic quality, there's evolutionary pressure to evolve a second chemical to neutralize that toxicity of the chemical. So plants have built-in antidotes. So I always like to get the whole plant.
Okay, one more quick question because I know we're kind of coming to the end. If someone is doing chemotherapy, for those that may be listening, they may have family members or friends on chemo, and they're getting cachexia, they're losing their muscle mass. What do you recommend to help people maintain weight when they're doing chemotherapy?
So a strategy I use is I use actually some anabolic anti-tumor supplements in the week prior to chemotherapy. Yes, it may rev up tumor growth a little bit, but if it revs up tumor growth, then that will make the chemotherapy more effective. So there are a number of botanicals. The product I use has astragalus in it, for example, andrographis, and some others in that category, echinacea and so forth, that kind of build your strength and strengthen your immune system and build your blood count, so after the chemotherapy, you're less likely to have a drop in white count and hemoglobin and platelet count and are able to maintain your chemotherapy regimen. So just in that window of time, maybe the 5 days prior to you fasting for chemotherapy, you can do some of these anabolic supplements to build and strengthen you. But afterwards, you don't want to do that because that helps tumor cells survive.
Well, so everything that you're talking about, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So for example, if you're getting chemotherapy every 3 weeks, then, the week before the chemotherapy, you use those supplements to kind of build up and strengthen. But afterwards, maybe look at herbs that are more cytotoxic that can help augment the effects of the chemotherapy. So if you do things cyclically like that, you're able to maintain your health and have successful chemotherapy outcomes.
So I was going to say, so much of this information is in this encyclopedia that you wrote called Vital Strategies in Cancer, and I think it's truly an incredibly important book for everyone to have as a resource, to have to learn from, to just become more knowledgeable, and certainly to have these amazing strategies, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. You cover everything in your book so people can have a guidebook to help them if they are facing a diagnosis, and hopefully learn from your book so they can prevent the conditions that can lead to cancer. So I want to make sure people have your website, which is vitalstrategiesincancer.com. vitalstrategiesandcancer.com, and also the other website you have people can go to is drroach.net, because there's more information there, and also you have a newsletter and a conference. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your newsletter and about your conference that you have every November?
Yeah, what I love to do is scour the internet for research. So I put out a monthly newsletter that kind of summarizes the findings that I have with that. I also incorporate a spiritual story from the patients who have shared with me as part of that. So be sure to, you're getting on the Vital Strategy and Cancer website. You can maybe connect up for the newsletter. With that, my conference, third weekend in November, is the most comprehensive integrative functional conference in the country, 1,200 pages of handouts that I put together personally that covers botanicals, vitamins, minerals, amino acids, covers every health disorder you can think of. And then I spend actually a day and a half teaching on cancer per se as well, integrative approaches with cancer. So this year it will be a day and a half of overall integrative health, and then followed by a day and a half focusing on integrative strategies in cancer.
And your newsletter?
So for the newsletter, I think if you go to thevitalstrategiesandcancer.com, it shows you where to go to sign up for the newsletter. But I guarantee you, you will get information that you won't get anywhere else with this newsletter. I cover a lot of territory.
Well, that's just wonderful that you're sharing so much information for people. Before we have to conclude this really important conversation, do you want to give us like your top maybe five strategies to optimize your health? What you think are the five top strategies, five or six?
So number one, you know, getting spiritually grounded is essential. Get in a peaceful spiritual place 24/7. If you need supplements to help you in that process, you want to do that. Now, with cancer, I haven't talked about circulation, but you know, when you're diagnosed with cancer, a fourfold high risk of heart attack, fourfold high risk of stroke, and a tenfold high risk of thrombophlebitis. I've had patients who did not do what I recommended, who've had a heart attack, who've had a massive stroke, who've had horrific thrombophlebitis where they had ropes for veins in their lower extremities. But in the 12 years I've been managing integratively cancer, I've not had a single patient I recall who's had a heart attack or a stroke, which tells you that you don't need to have, you know, experience those issues with that. So nutrition, a whole food, plant-based, organic diet is really important. You know, daily physical activity is critical to help circulation and detoxification. And, you know, meditation, prayer are important aspects of that. And finding positive work environments and having a positive energy home environment, all very, very important in this process.
Well, you have such wonderful information. Thank you so much for all the work you've done and your passion to educate and empower people so they can truly heal and live productive, meaningful lives. Thank you, Dr. Jim Roach. I want people to go to your website, vitalstrategiesandcancer.com, because you'll get so much information. Pick up the book, Vital Strategies in Cancer. It's really one of those Bibles you want to have at your disposal. And also check out the wonderful newsletter that Dr. Jim Roach has put together to help get us all educated and empowered so we can make truly informed decisions. So, Dr. Jim Roach, thank you so much for your time, for your passion, for your commitment, for the guidance you give to all of us so we can really maintain our health at all times, no matter what. Thank you so much. It's just such an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Thanks for the invitation.
And you're so welcome. And to all of you listening, thank you so much for joining me today for another opportunity to truly get empowered. And until next time, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.